Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and Merry Christmas. I'm so glad that I can say that to you because I'm trying to be very respectful of those of you who don't say Merry Christmas or put up your decorations until after Thanksgiving. But we are there, my friends. So Merry Christmas. I will say it as many times as I can. I love, love, love Christmas. And today I thought it would be good for us just to spend a little bit of time reflecting on some of the traditions of Christmas, the beauty of Christmas, all of the just beautiful things about Christmas. So I'm going to share with you some stories that have been written in some of my favorite Christmas books. And let's just have a little moment of peace on earth, right? Don't we need that so much? And thinking about the Advent season and finding peace and hope and joy and love, all of those things that we need to find at Christmas. And I have shared this with you before, but I really want to share one of the reasons why I love Christmas, several of the reasons why. Now, most of you know I have a tradition of putting up my Christmas tree on Halloween. Yes, I do. And for those of you who haven't heard the story, this is how that started. So one of my children, one of my daughters, when she was young, she had an immune deficiency and she was really sick, couldn't go anywhere. We had to be very careful about where we took her and who we let be around her because we were trying to keep her from getting sick. And one Halloween, my kids were going to a church event and she couldn't go. And she was very distraught. She was at that young age where even little things like that just seem like the end of the world. And I was distraught because we were both at a point where we were just sick of this. We were really sick of being sick. And so I asked her, I said, what would make it better? What can we do? And she said, can we put up the Christmas tree? I said, absolutely. So my sweet husband dutifully pulled out the Christmas tree from the attic and we decorated that while they were gone. And it was beautiful. It was so great to put on some Christmas music, to see all of the ornaments that captured our special memories and places we had gone, people we have loved. And it really changed her attitude. And of course, when everyone else came home, they thought, what in the world did you do? But the next year, when Halloween came around, which I'm not a big fan of Halloween, honestly, she said, can we do it again? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And it just kind of stuck. So that's what we do. But you know, one of the reasons that I love Christmas so much is really because of my granny, my grandmother. She absolutely loved Christmas. And so often at this time of year, as parents, as grandparents, you may start to be feeling the pressure of gifts. What are we going to get our kids? What are we going to do? Where are we going to go? What kind of special holiday things are we going to have? But let me just encourage you, because Christmas is really not made from material means. It's just not. We act like it is. We think that it is, but it isn't. Christmas is really made of memories. And that time together is so much more important than anything else that we could ever do. Because I'm going to go out on a limb and bet that you can't remember every gift that you've ever gotten, but you do have special memories. Maybe it was something sacrificial that someone did for you. Maybe it was something special that was homemade. Maybe it was laughter and calamity, or maybe it was finding peace in the middle of something hard. So let me tell you right here, right now, as we're getting really close to actual Christmas, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, it is totally fine if you do not have family pictures and matching pajamas. It's totally fine if you don't spend a lot of money on Instagram-worthy holiday activities. It is perfectly fine for you to have a Christmas, a December, where every moment is not perfectly orchestrated. It is fine to do that because, you know, we talk a lot about the harm that social media causes young people today, and we're quick to point the finger at that. But the truth is, it harms us as adults, and we feel this holiday stress, whether it's supposed to look like a movie or social media, and it drives us to our phones. We look around and we see all of these people taking glorious vacations, and we think, I can't even put food on the table. And we see those things, and it causes us to have some envy in our hearts. Now, I am not knocking any of those experiences. Some families have different gifts, different blessings that they share with other people. But I'm just saying that wherever you are, wherever God has placed you, with whatever resources He has blessed you with, God knows you, He sees you, He loves you, and you can absolutely have the best Christmas ever, because one of the best aspects of Christmas is family traditions that point us back to the true meaning of Christmas. Some of that is in their uniqueness, because some traditions are downright nonsensical, if we're really honest. Some traditions are even a little weird. They don't make sense at all, but it's just what your family does at the holidays. That's what makes them fun. That's what bonds us together. So before we go any further, I want to challenge you to release yourself from the pressure of delivering a perfect Christmas. Lift your eyes from that tiny lighted rectangle peephole you have that is your smartphone into a world that is often an illusion to see very real people who value and desire your presence much more than they want your presents, your gifts. They want the gift of your presence more than they want those things that you are going to buy. And this is very true from my granny. Now, my granny did not ever have a lot of money at all. She was on a very strict budget, a very fixed income, but she bought gifts every single year for her children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. She would budget ahead, and she had 12 grandchildren and almost 30, like 28, I think, is what I counted, great-grandchildren. And maybe all the boys would get a thermos, and maybe the girls would get a cookbook. But then when she couldn't go out anywhere, she would give everyone a $25 gift card to a discount department store. And this was her ask. I want you to go buy something that you love, and then I want you to come back and visit with me and show me what you got and tell me about why you got it and just spend time with me. That's what she wanted. That was so absolutely beautiful to me. And if you think about it, with all of those children, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, her door was constantly revolving with people coming in. And really, what they didn't know was that it was so much better to give than to receive. And she gave us more than we ever could have asked for. And one of my favorite things that she ever gave me was when I got married, she came to one of my wedding showers, and she had this little plastic box, just a little plastic Tupperware box. And when I opened it up, I discovered that every year from the year that I was born, she made an ornament for me that year. Now, these are not, you know, priceless heirlooms made of glass collectibles. Those things have their time and place. These were clothespin reindeer. These were squashed soda cans that became painted as Santa and Mrs. Claus's faces. And it was absolutely precious, because she said when I was starting my new home with my husband, she didn't want me to have a pitiful little tree with no ornaments on it. And she wanted to see relics of the time and just remember that she loved me. And that was really, really special. So if you are looking for a holiday survival guide and thinking, okay, we have Christmas coming up, I'm feeling all of the stress, and you think you're really trying to work to make something happen. And sometimes we work so hard to make something happen that our family doesn't have the reaction to that we kind of expect them to. And then we think, why didn't you appreciate all of the work that I put into it? And they're thinking, I never asked you for that in the first place. So let me give you a few tips for holiday survival. I said it before, I'll say it again. Magical Christmases are not created by material means, but by meaningful memories. And those are the greatest gift that every family wants from you, no matter what they say, is your time. So don't stress about spending all your money while not thinking twice about hoarding your time or wasting your time. You have that as a commodity. Every single person on this earth has time, as a commodity to give, and it is the most precious gift you can give to your family. So if you're stressing, thinking, I don't have the money to buy these gifts, you have the time to create something beautiful. And some of us have more time than others, just because maybe you're working to put food on the table or to provide some of those gifts. But time is really the most precious thing that once it's spent, we can never get back. So when you're starting to feel that holiday stress, I want you to stop and ask yourself, is this stress self-imposed? Is this someone else's expectation, or is it my own expectation and pressure that I'm putting on myself? Did I overcommit my time? Did I overcommit my finances to something that in the end really doesn't matter, or that I simply don't have the time to give to something else? And because I want to save that time for my family, is that obligation that you feel self-inflicted? And then intentionally change your priorities to make memory investments, not monetary ones. Feel the freedom of just saying no this holiday season. Just say, I am not available. Thank you for the invitation, but we are not available. And let something go. Forgive yourself, find peace in that self-release, and prioritize your mental health. That is so important to do. And I want to read I'm actually going to share with you several of these stories. This is from one of my older Christmas books. It's Christmas Stories for the Heart, and it's got a lot of collections of great Christmas stories and just messages in here. And so let me read to you for one from Charles Swindoll. It's called Daily Gifts. It's not too early to give some things away this Christmas, not just on Christmas Day, but during all the days leading up to December 25th. We could call these daily gifts our Christmas projects. Maybe you have one a day from now until then. You still have some time. Here are a few suggestions. Mend a quarrel. Wouldn't that be great? If you have a disagreement with someone, go out and make it better. Apologize wherever you need to apologize. Seek peace. Seek reconciliation. Maybe the gift that you give is seeking out a forgotten friend, someone you haven't talked to in a really long time. Give them the gift of your presence. Give them a phone call, a text message, an email, a Christmas card. Reach out to them. Write a long overdue love note. So in your spouse, in the hustle and bustle of Christmas, are they out there running all the errands for you? Is if you're a husband looking at your wife, is she doing all the things, doing all the shopping, the baking, or whatever it is that she's doing to make Christmas special? Well, write her a love note and tell her thank you for doing that. Is your husband running around trying to do all of the errands? I know I give my husband a big to-do list. Write them a love note. Maybe it's time just to give someone a hug and just tell them that you love them. And not just a rushed hug, but a 20-second hug that causes a release of oxytocin and other feel-good chemicals in your brain. That's a great way and a great gift to give. Just stop and give someone a hug that needs it. Forgive an enemy. Be gentle and patient with an angry person. Express appreciation. Gladden the heart of a child. Find the time to keep a promise. Make or bake something for someone else anonymously. Release a grudge. Listen. Speak kindly to a stranger. Enter into another's sorrow. Smile. Laugh a little. Laugh a little more. Take a walk with a friend. Kneel down and pat a dog. Read a poem or two to your mate or friend. Lessen your demands on others. Play some beautiful music during the evening meal. Make it Christmas music, why don't you? Apologize if you were wrong. Turn off the television or your phone, I'll add, and actually have a conversation. Treat someone to a special Christmas treat. Maybe that's ice cream, or maybe that's something healthier. Do the dishes for the family. Pray for someone who helped you when you hurt. Fix breakfast on a Saturday morning. Give a soft answer even when you feel strongly. Encourage an older person. Point out one thing you appreciate about someone you work with or live near. Offer to babysit for a weary mama. Give your teacher a break. Be especially cooperative. Let's make Christmas one long, extended gift of ourselves to others, unselfishly, without announcement or obligation or reservation or hypocrisy. this is not only Christmas, that's Christianity, isn't it? I'll see you right on the other side of this break with some Christmas music. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that is a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Welcome back, friends. That song is It's Christmas by Chris Tomlin, and it is finally Christmas. I celebrate Christmas all year long, but it is actually really, truly Christmas. We are just around the corner from Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, just in the time when kids are finishing up school and parents are trying to finish up their Christmas plans. Maybe you're expecting family to come. Whatever it is that you're doing for Christmas, I know this week can be really busy. So I just wanted to give you a little break in the middle of the afternoon. Some great Christmas music, some encouragement, some of my favorite Christmas stories and traditions, just so that we can all kind of collectively calm down and remember the true meaning of Christmas. So I want to share with you one of my favorite Christmas stories. Many of you probably have stacks in your house somewhere of Reader's Digest magazines. My granny was an avid reader of Reader's Digest, and this was back before the internet when we didn't have things to read, and it was as easily as we do now. We didn't have streaming for sure. And it was really exciting when that Reader's Digest would come in, and I would really love the stories that were in there. And this is actually a story from Reader's Digest from December of 1954. It's called The Gold and Ivory Tablecloth by Howard C. Shade, and I'm going to share it with you because this is one of my favorite Christmas stories. At Christmas time, men and women everywhere gather in their churches to wonder anew at the greatest miracle the world has ever known. But the story I like best to recall was not a miracle. Not exactly. It happened to a pastor who was very young. His church was very old. Once long ago, it had flourished. Famous men had preached from its pulpit, prayed before its altar. Rich and poor alike worshipped there and built it beautifully. Now the good days had passed from the section of town where it stood, but the pastor and his young wife believed in their rundown church. They felt that with paint, hammer, and faith, they could get it in shape. Together, they went to work. But in late December, a severe storm whipped through the river valley, and the worst blow fell on the little church. A huge chunk of rain-soaked plaster fell out of the inside wall just behind the altar. Sorrowfully, the pastor and his wife swept away the mess, but they couldn't hide the ragged hole. The pastor looked at it and had to remind himself quickly, "Thy will be done." But his wife wept. Christmas is only 2 days away. That afternoon, the dispirited couple attended the auction held for the benefit of a youth group. The auctioneer opened a box and shook out of its folds a handsome gold and ivory lace tablecloth. It was a magnificent item, nearly 15 feet long, but it too dated from a long vanished era. Who today had any use for such a thing? There were a few half-hearted bids, and then the pastor was seized with what he thought was a great idea. He bid it in for $6.50. He carried the cloth back to the church and tacked it up on the wall behind the altar. It completely hid the hole, and the extraordinary beauty of its shimmering handiwork cast a fine holiday glow over the chancel. It was a great triumph. Happily, he went back to preparing his Christmas sermon. And just before noon on the day of Christmas Eve, as the pastor was opening the church, he noticed a woman standing in the cold at the bus stop. "The bus won't be here for 40 minutes," he called, and invited her into the church to get warm. She told him that she had come from the city that morning to be interviewed for a job as governess to the children of one of the wealthy families in town, but she had been turned down. A war refugee, her English was imperfect. The woman sat down in a pew and chafed her hands and rested. After a while, she dropped her head and prayed, and she looked up as the pastor began to adjust the great ivory and gold lace cloth across the hole. She rose suddenly and walked up the steps of the chancel. She looked at the tablecloth. The pastor smiled and started to tell her about the storm damage, but she didn't seem to listen. She took up a fold of the cloth and rubbed it between her fingers. "It is mine," she said. "It is my banquet cloth." She lifted the corner and showed the surprised pastor that there were initials monogrammed on it. "My husband had the cloth made especially for me in Brussels. There could not be another like it." For the next few minutes, the woman and the pastor talked excitedly together. She explained that she was Viennese, that she and her husband had opposed the Nazis and decided to leave the country. They were advised to go separately. Her husband put her on a train for Switzerland. They planned that he would join her as soon as he could arrange to ship their household goods across the border. She never saw him again. And later she heard that he died in a concentration camp. "I have always felt that it was my fault to leave without him," she said. "Perhaps these years of wandering have been my punishment." The pastor tried to comfort her and urged her to take the cloth with her. She refused, and then she went away. As the church began to fill on Christmas Eve, it was clear that the cloth was going to be a great success. It had been skillfully designed to look its best by candlelight. After the service, the pastor stood in the doorway, and many people told him that the church looked beautiful. One gentle-faced, middle-aged man, he was the local clock and watch repairman, looked rather puzzled. "It is strange," he said in his soft accent. "Many years ago, my wife, God rest her, and I owned such a cloth. In our home in Vienna, my wife put it on the table." Harry smiled. "Only when the bishop came to dinner." The pastor suddenly became very excited. He told the jeweler about the woman who had been in the church earlier that day. The startled jeweler clutched the pastor's arm. "Can it be? Does she live?" Together, the two got in touch with the family who had interviewed her. Then, in the pastor's car, they started for the city. And as Christmas Day was born, this man and his wife, who had been separated through so many saddened Yuletides, were reunited. To all who heard this story, the joyful purpose of the storm that knocked a hole in the wall of the church was now quite clear. Of course, people said it was a miracle, and I think you will agree, it was the season for it. So here's my question for you. What storm has knocked a hole in your life? What storm has knocked a hole in what you feel like was supposed to be the perfect Christmas? Is it missing someone who has died? Is it missing someone who you wish could be there but just can't or maybe won't? Is it a health struggle, a financial struggle, a relational struggle? Whatever that hole is knocked in the wall of your Christmas, know that we serve a God who creates things like an ivory and gold tablecloth that will be used for your good and for His glory. I encourage you to lift your eyes to the real meaning of Christmas. And let me read to you The Arrival by Max Lucado from the book God Came Near. The noise and the bustle began earlier than usual in the village. As night gave way to dawn, people were already on the streets. Vendors were positioning themselves on the corners of the most heavily traveled avenues. Store owners were unlocking their doors to their shops. Children were awakened by the excited barking of the street dogs and the complaints of donkeys pulling carts. The owner of the inn had awakened earlier than most in the town. After all, the inn was full, all the beds taken. Every available mat or blanket had been put to use. Soon, all of the customers would be stirring and there would be a lot to do. One's imagination is kindled thinking about the conversation of the innkeeper and his family at the breakfast table. Did anyone mention the arrival of the young couple the night before? Did anyone ask about their welfare? Did anyone comment on the pregnancy of the girl on the donkey, perhaps? Perhaps someone raised the subject, but at best it was raised, not discussed. There was nothing that novel about them. They were possibly one of several families turned away that night. Besides, who had time to talk about them when there was so much excitement in the air? Augustus did the economy of Bethlehem a favor when he decreed that a census should be taken. Who could remember when such commerce had hit the village? No, it is doubtful that anyone mentioned the couple's arrival or wondered about the condition of the girl. They were too busy. The day was upon them. The day's bread had to be made. The morning's chores had to be done. There was too much to do to imagine that the impossible had occurred. God had entered the world as a baby. Yet were someone to chance upon the sheep stable on the outskirts of Bethlehem that morning, what a peculiar scene they would behold. The stable stinks like all stables do. The stench of urine, dung, and sheep reeks pungently in the air. The ground is hard, the hay scarce. Cobwebs cling to the ceiling, and a mouse scurries across the floor. A more lowly place of birth could not exist. Off to one side sits a group of shepherds. They sit silently on the floor, perhaps perplexed, perhaps in awe, no doubt in amazement. Their night watch had been interrupted by an explosion of light from heaven and a symphony of angels. God goes to those who have time to hear Him. So on this cloudless night, He went to simple shepherds. Near the young mother sits the weary father. If anyone is dozing, he is. He can't remember the last time he sat down. And now that the excitement has subsided a bit, now that Mary and the baby are comfortable, he leans against the wall of the stable and feels his eyes grow heavy. He still hasn't figured it all out. The mystery of the event puzzles him. But he hasn't the energy to wrestle with the questions. What's important is that the baby is fine and that Mary is safe. As sleep comes, he remembers the name the angel told him to use. Jesus. We will call him Jesus. Wide awake is Mary. My, how young she looks. Her head rests on the soft leather of Joseph's saddle. The pain has been eclipsed by wonder. She looks into the face of the baby, her son, her Lord, his majesty. At this point in history, the human being who best understands who God is and what he is doing is a teenage girl in a smelly stable. She can't take her eyes off him. Somehow Mary knows she is holding God. So this is he. She remembers the words of the angel. His kingdom will never end. He looks like anything but a king. His face is prunish and red. His cry, though strong and healthy, is still the helpless and piercing cry of a baby. And he is absolutely dependent upon Mary for his well-being. Majesty in the midst of the mundane, holiness in the filth of sheep manure and sweat. Divinity entering the world on the floor of a stable, through the womb of a teenager, and in the presence of a carpenter. She touches the face of the infant God. How long was your journey? This baby had overlooked the universe. These rags, keeping him warm, were the robes of eternity. His golden throne room had been abandoned in favor of a dirty sheep pen. And worshiping angels had been replaced with kind but bewildered shepherds. Meanwhile, the city hums. The merchants are unaware that God has visited their planet. The innkeeper would never believe that he had just sent God into the cold. And the people would scoff at anyone who told them the Messiah lay in the arms of a teenager on the outskirts of their village. They were all too busy to consider the possibility. Those who missed His Majesty's arrival that night missed it not because of evil acts or malice. No, they missed it because they simply weren't looking. Little has changed in the last 2,000 years, has it? So if this is you, we make Christmas so busy, and sometimes we miss the miracle and the wonder of the real meaning of Christmas. So friends, you still have some time. There are a few days left. Lift your eyes from the speed of your smartphone, from the pressures of your social calendar, from the feelings of guilt, of the financial pressures that go along with what you feel like you need to provide a good Christmas. Ask God to step in, to be your miracle in the mundane, to have the best Christmas ever, not by material means, but by a spiritual gift. Because the real meaning of Christmas is Jesus, and He came for you, and He came for me. And when we come back, I'm going to share with you some words of encouragement about God's love for us that prompted the greatest gift of all time. We'll be back with more of Merry Christmas here on the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We'll see you on the other side of this break.
We live in a day when America's families are under attack like never before.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
The war against biblical principles rages on numerous fronts. The internet, Hollywood, Washington, D.C., America's corporate boardrooms, and the list goes on. At American Family Association, we're committed to standing against the enemies of God, the enemies of your family. And we recognize it's an impossible task without God's favor and your partnership. Thank you for being faithful to pray for this ministry, to give financially, and to respond to our calls for activism. What you do on the home front is crucial to what we do on the battlefront. We praise God for your faithfulness, and may He give us many victories in the battles ahead as we work together to restore our nation's biblical foundations.
Time of the year with the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Welcome back, friends. I do believe it is the most wonderful time of the year. I love Christmas. I love Christmas because of my granny and the way that I saw her sacrificial love really come through to me. She just always wanted to make Christmas so special. She did not have a lot of money for sure, but she was always the one that was going to make the best cookies and just wanted to spend time together. I have so many memories of singing in the choir with her and practicing for weeks and weeks and months on a cassette tape that she would have to flip over and rewind, and we would practice the alto part together forever. And really, all of those investments of memories that she poured into me were to point me to a Savior who came for me. Now, I've been sharing with you some of my favorite stories and traditions from Christmas's past, and just giving us a moment to lift our eyes to the real meaning of Christmas. In the middle of the hustle and bustle, we don't have anything heavy, nothing depressing today. We just have words of hope and encouragement. So let's just take these last few minutes together to shift our perspective. Before the break, I read to you an excerpt from Max Lucado's book and talking about what imagining, what must it have looked like in the stable that night when Jesus was born. And I want to share with you a kind of humorous story called Trouble at the End. This is by Dina Donahue, and this is how this story goes, and I'm sure many of you know something similar and can relate. Wally was 9 that year and in the second grade, though he knew he should have been in the fourth. Most people in town knew that he had difficulty in keeping up. He was big and clumsy, slow in movement and mind. Still, Wally was well-liked by the other children in his class, all of whom were smaller than he, though the boys had trouble hiding their irritation when Wally would ask to play ball with them or play any game for that matter in which winning was most important. Most often, they would find a way to keep him out, but Wally would hang around anyway, not sulking, just hoping. He was always a helpful boy, a willing and smiling one, the natural protector, paradoxically, of the underdog. Sometimes if the older boys chased the younger ones away, it would be Wally who would say, "Can't they stay? They're no bother." Wally fancied the idea of being a shepherd with a flute in the Christmas pageant that year, but the play's director, Miss Lombard, assigned him to a more important role. After all, she reasoned, the innkeeper did not have too many lines, and Wally's size would make his refusal of lodging to Joseph more forceful. And so it happened that the usual large audience gathered for the town's yearly extravaganza of creches, beards, crowns, halos, and a whole stage full of squeaky voices. No one on stage or off was more caught up in the magic of the night than Wallace Purling. They said later that he stood in the wings and watched the performance with such fascination that from time to time, Miss Lombard had to make sure he didn't wander on stage before his cue. Then the time came when Joseph appeared, slowly, tenderly guiding Mary to the door of the inn. Joseph knocked hard on the wooden door set into the painted backdrop. Wally, the innkeeper, was there waiting. "What do you want?" demanded Wally, swinging the door open with a brusque gesture. "We seek lodging." "Seek it elsewhere." Wally looked straight ahead, but spoke vigorously. "The inn is filled." "Sir, we have asked everywhere in vain. We have traveled far and are very weary." "There is no room in this inn for you." Wally looked properly stern. "Please, good innkeeper, this is my wife, Mary. She is heavy with child and needs a place to rest. Surely you must have some small corner for her. She is so tired." Now, for the first time, the innkeeper relaxed his stiff stance and looked down at Mary. With that, there was a long pause, long enough to make the audience a bit tense with embarrassment. "No, be gone," the prompter whispered from the wings. "No," Wally repeated automatically. "Be gone." Joseph placed his arm around Mary, and Mary laid her head upon her husband's shoulder, and the two of them started to move away. The innkeeper did not return inside his inn, however. Wally stood there in the doorway, watching the forlorn couple. His mouth was open, his brow creased with concern, his eyes filling unmistakably with tears. And suddenly, this Christmas pageant became different from all others. "Don't go, Joseph," Wally called out. "Bring Mary back." And Wallace Perling's face grew into a bright smile. "You can have my room." You know, I fully believe that there is so much wonder to be found in looking at Christmas through the eyes of children. They have such a delight and such a joy in the simple truths of the story of Christmas. And we would be remiss if we missed that. Sometimes as adults, we lose the wonder of what really happened for us at Christmas. And the wonder of it, that is God's love for you. So I want to take a moment for someone out there who is discouraged, who is feeling like, does God really love me? Let me share with you again some words from Max Lucado from his book, One Incredible Moment, Celebrating the Majesty of the Manger. Untethered by time, God sees us all. From the backwoods of Virginia to the business district of London, from the Vikings to the astronauts, from the cave dwellers to the kings, from the hut builders to the finger pointers to the rock stackers, he sees us, vagabond and ragamuffins all. He saw us before we were born, and he loves what he sees, flooded by emotion, overcome by pride. The star maker turns to us one by one and says, "You are my child. I love you dearly. I'm aware that someday you'll turn from me and walk away, but I want you to know I've already provided a way back. And to prove it, he did something extraordinary. Stepping from the throne, he removed his robe of light and wrapped himself in skin, pigmented human skin. The light of the universe entered a dark, wet womb. He whom angels worship nestled himself in the placenta of a peasant, was birthed into a cold night, and then slept on cow's hay. Mary didn't know whether to give him milk or give him praise, but she gave him both, since he was, as near as she could figure, hungry and holy. Joseph didn't know whether to call him Junior or Father, but in the end he called him Jesus, since that's what the angel had said, and since he didn't have the faintest idea what to name a God he could cradle in his arms. Don't you think? Their heads tilted and their minds wondered, what in the world are you doing, God? Or better phrased, God, what are you doing in the world? Can anything make me stop loving you? God asks. Watch me speak your language. Sleep on your earth and feel your hurts. Behold the maker of sight and sound, as he sneezes, coughs, and blows his nose. You wonder if I understand how you feel. Look into the dancing eyes of the kid in Nazareth. That's God walking to school. Ponder the toddler at Mary's table. That's God spilling his milk. You wonder how long my love will last. Find your answer on a splintered cross on a craggy hill. That's me you see up there, your maker, your God, nail stabbed and bleeding, covered in spit and sin soaked. That's your sin I'm feeling. That's your death I'm dying. That's your resurrection I'm living. That's how much I love you. How great is God's love? How can the creator of the universe care about the twists and turns of your life's journey? Ponder this thought. If God is able to place the stars in their sockets and suspend the sky like a curtain, do you think it remotely possible that God is able to guide your life? If your God is mighty enough to ignite the sun, could it be that he is mighty enough to light your path? If he cares enough about the planet Saturn to give it rings or Venus to make it sparkle, is there an outside chance that he cares enough about you to meet your needs? Or as Jesus says, look at the birds in the air. They don't plant or harvest or store into barns, but your heavenly Father feeds them. and you know you are worth much more than the birds. Why do you worry about clothes? Look at how the lilies in the field grow. They don't work or make clothes for themselves, but I tell you that even Solomon with his riches was not dressed as beautifully as one of these flowers. God clothes the grass in the field, which is alive today, but tomorrow is thrown into the fire. So you can even be sure that God will clothe you. Don't have so little faith. Why did he do it? Did he have to give the birds a song and the mountains a peak? Was he required to put stripes on the zebra and the hump on the camel? Would we have known the difference had he made the sunsets gray instead of orange? Why do stars have twinkles and the waves snowy crest? Why dash the cardinal in red and drape the beluga whale in white? Why wrap creation in such splendor? Why go to such trouble to give such gifts? Why do you? You do the same. I've seen you searching for a gift. I've seen you stalking the malls and walking the aisles. And I'm not talking about obligatory gifts. I'm not describing the last-minute purchase of drugstore perfume on the way to the birthday party. Forget blue light specials and discount purchases. I'm talking about that extra special person and that extra special gift. I'm talking about stashing away a few dollars a month out of the grocery money to buy him some lizard skin boots, or staring at 1,000 rings to find her the best diamond, staying up all night Christmas Eve assembling the new bicycle. Why do you do it? You do it so the eyes will pop. You do it so the heart will stop. You do it so the jaw will drop. You do it to hear those words of disbelief. You did this for me? That's why you do it. And that's why God did it. Next time a sunrise steals your breath or a meadow of flowers leaves you speechless, remain that way. Say nothing and listen as heaven whispers, "Do you like it? I did it just for you." I'm about to tell you something you may find hard to believe. You're about to hear an opinion that may stretch your imagination. You don't have to agree with me, but I would like you to consider it with me. You don't have to buy it, but at least think about it. Here it is. If you were the only person on earth, the earth would look exactly the same. The Himalayas would still have their drama, and the Caribbean would still have its charm. The sun would still nestle behind the Rockies in the evenings and spray light on the desert in the mornings. If you were the sole pilgrim on this globe, God would not diminish its beauty one degree, because he did it all for you, and he's waiting for you to discover his gift. He's waiting for you to stumble into the den, rub the sleep from your eyes, and see the bright red bike he assembled just for you. He's waiting for your eyes to pop and your heart to stop, and he's waiting for the moment between the dropping of the jaw and the leap of the heart, for in that silence, he leans forward and whispers, "I did it for you." Find such love hard to believe? That's okay. Just because we can't imagine God's giving us sunsets, don't think God doesn't do it. God's thoughts are higher than ours. God's ways are greater than ours. And sometimes out of his great wisdom, our Father in heaven gives us a piece of heaven just to show that he cares. That is how much he loves you. And going on in the words of Max Lucado, "My daughters are too old for this now, but when they were young, crib size and diaper laden, I would come home, shout their names, and watch them run to me with extended arms and squealing voices. And for the next few moments, we would speak the language of love. We'd roll on the floor, gobble bellies, tickle tummies, and laugh and play. And we delighted in each other's presence. My kids let me love them." Can you let God love you? You think you're not worthy, but neither was Judas. But Jesus washed his feet. Neither was Peter, but Jesus fixed him breakfast. Neither were the Emmaus-bound disciples, but Jesus took time to sit at their table. Besides, who are we to determine if we're worthy? Our job is simply to be still enough to let him have us and let him love us. So friend, I ask you, do you see him? When it's Christmas night and the house is quiet and the crackle is gone from the fireplace and warm coals issue a lighthouse glow in the darkened den, the stockings are empty, and it's Christmas night. Do you see him? This is a question that we have to ask, because he is everywhere. And for a few precious hours, he is beheld, Christ the Lord, Those who pass the year without seeing him suddenly see him. People who have been accustomed to using his name in vain pause to use it in praise. Eyes now free of the blindness of self marvel at his majesty. He's everywhere. And the grin of the policeman, and the twinkle of the eyes of the waiter, and the motion of the father, and the tears of the mother, and the heart of the man who spent Christmas morning on Skid Row giving away cold bologna sandwiches and warm wishes. For the moment, he is there. Well, listen, friends, God is here. He is here among us. He is Emmanuel, God with us. And I hope that you've enjoyed this pause to lift our eyes to the real meaning of Christmas that is not found in the mall, but in the manger. Merry, Merry Christmas, friends. May the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. And I'll see you here tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.